Welcome to episode 438 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. It was 40 days after the resurrection. The 11 disciples, and likely other unnamed followers, had gathered together on a high mountain in Galilee where Jesus was to impart the Great Commission before ascending to his Father in heaven. Matthew tells us they worshipped him, but some doubted. Do you find it remarkable that some disciples doubted? At that point, after all that had happened, with irrefutable evidence that Jesus had power over death and the grave, one can argue that it is both remarkable and eminently reasonable and comforting, because we find ourselves in good company when we, those who count ourselves as Christians, also struggle with doubts. The Greek word here translated as doubt often refers to a wavering, hesitant uncertainty, a general lack of confidence. What made some of the disciples waver on the Galilean mountain? Matthew doesn't tell us, and perhaps that was a conscious omission. I imagine each doubter's doubt varied to some degree, depending on his experience and temperament. Suffice it to say, strange encounters with the resurrected Son of God and the scope of the mission he was giving them, colliding with all their prior conceptions and contrasting with their experience of normal life, would have been a surreal experience for any normal person. It would be strange if some didn't doubt. The remarkable and comforting fact is that some of Jesus' first disciples, who personally saw and heard so many amazing things, doubted. Is it any surprise that some of us also experience a wavering, hesitant uncertainty? That some of us experience doubt? Doubt about what? That what we have seen, heard, and experienced is all real? Even doubt that all we have been told, all that we have studied, all that we have believed is true? This is why I'm so thankful that Jesus' brother Jude wrote, "Have mercy on those who doubt." The short book of Jude, one chapter and only 25 verses, is mostly a sober warning against false teachers. Like John's epistles, Peter's second epistle, and Hebrews, Jude wants us to feel the seriousness of the perversion of and departure from the gospel so that we will persevere in faithfulness. If we were to summarize this book in one sentence, it might be this: contend for the faith, even though ungodly persons have crept in unnoticed. But in his closing remarks, he says, "Have mercy on those who doubt." Jude uses a different Greek word that is translated doubt, but which also means a wavering uncertainty, and as one dictionary puts it, being at odds with oneself. In other words, be merciful to those who are struggling over the competing truth claims. Don't crush them or condemn them. Help them. I can't help but think that Jude recalled how Jesus showed mercy to him, because there was a time when he doubted his divine brother's claims, and Jesus at some point helped him. John 7 verse 5, "For not even his brothers believed in him." And yet we see books in the New Testament written by Jude and James, both brothers of Jesus. The New Testament uses a number of different Greek words for doubt, because not all doubt is the same, and not all doubters are the same. Therefore, mercy toward doubters doesn't always look the same. Some cases call for patient, compassionate understanding and encouragement. Some cases call for an exhortation or even a rebuke. That's why we see a range of responses from Jesus toward those who doubted. In Matthew 11, verses 2 to 6, we see a touching example of Jesus' kindness to a surprising doubter, John the Baptist. God had revealed Jesus' identity to John in utero and by special revelation. But confined in Herod's prison, likely knowing he wasn't getting out alive, and likely experiencing significant spiritual oppression, John was second-guessing whether he had been right about his calling as forerunner, as the one who was to prepare the way. So he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?" Jesus' response was merciful kindness, intended to fortify John's faith in his last brutal days. Jesus recognizes that John is in a weakened condition, and he does not break a bruised reed. He knows when to deal gently with the doubts that assault us in the darkness of suffering and isolation. In Matthew 14, verses 28 to 33, Jesus addresses a different kind of doubt with a different kind of mercy. Peter had just exercised significant faith in Jesus, getting out of a boat to walk on top of a stormy sea. But when he was partway to Jesus, Peter realized just how incredible this whole experience was. People don't walk on water. As he lost faith in Jesus' power, Jesus let him sink. This prompted Peter to scream, "Lord, save me!" Even when Peter failed, Jesus was there to save him. After Jesus brought Peter back to the boat, he challenged him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Jesus' response to Peter faltering was merciful disappointment. A lack of faith led to the doubt and distraction that made Peter sink under the wind and waves. Jesus' rebuke was for Peter and also for the other disciples. He wanted them to be careful to not trade faith for fear. He wanted them to not lose confidence in the power of the word in favor of deferring to the power of the world. Jesus knows when to deal firmly with the doubts that assault us in the storms of life that demand focused, persevering faith. Jesus only asked this question once Peter was rescued. Yet at that point, it was an entirely reasonable question to ask. Why did Peter doubt? Doubt is literally be divided in two. True faith is single-mindedly focused on Jesus. It is useful for us to confront our doubts. Was there a good reason for doubt? Was there any good excuse for it? Did any good come from it? John 20 records the most famous instance of Jesus dealing with a disciple's doubt. When Thomas heard that the other 10 disciples had seen the risen Jesus, while he hadn't, he declared, "Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails, and place my finger into the mark of the nails, and place my hand into his side, I will never believe." We can only speculate what was going on inside of Thomas's head, but this is a different kind of doubt, different from either John the Baptist's or Peter's. This is skeptical doubt about the central claims of Christianity. It's doubt in Jesus' own predictions and in the eyewitness accounts of people Thomas knew. Jesus' response was merciful delay. He let Thomas sit in his unbelief for 8 miserable, lonely, probably scary days. And then when the time was right, Jesus appeared to him, saying, "Do not disbelieve, but believe." He knows when to deal silently and for how long. With doubts that assault us when, for whatever reason, we elevate our wisdom above God's. The fight of faith is hard. Doubt in whatever form is part of the hard fight. Doubt is dangerous to faith and, to some degree, a necessary experience of believers in an age where the faith once for all delivered to the saints is under a constant assault, where well-aimed flaming darts are frequently being shot at them, and when believers, on their best days, see only a mirror dimly and know only in part. On their worst days, this mirror can seem very dim indeed. So let us be merciful to those who doubt. Let us not crush them or condemn them. Let us learn from Jesus that this mercy takes different forms for different doubts, none of which is crushing or condemning. And let us tread carefully here, praying in the Holy Spirit that we may keep ourselves and others in the love of God. Father, thank you for your mercy. Even though we may doubt, you do not condemn or crush us, but you find ways to restore us unto yourself. Help our unbelief, and help us also to be patient and merciful with others. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.